Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride. With your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining another episode of the podcast by Sons of Technology. We have some really great content for you. We're going to dive deep into what is going to be happening at Spring Q starting March 18th through 27th. And then after we do that little kind of Spring Q, you know, jump, we're going to be talking a little bit about accessibility tools that we have seen to be a very big benefit to our students, not only during this time of distance learning, but also when we get back into the classroom. So before we get started, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. My name is Joe Marquez. I am the Director of Academic Innovation for Q. I am a former eighth grade science teacher out of the Central Valley of California. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. This is Kyle Anderson once again, special education teacher in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech. Same with the Instagram. My blog, AndersonEdTech.net, and then my book, To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And yeah, I'm really excited about this conversation because I actually just was recording an episode of one of my other podcasts the other day where we were talking about some of the materials that were created by the digital engineers in the Nevada Digital Learning Collaborative, or NVDLC, and available on their website, nvdigitallearning.org. And it actually deals with accessibility and some Chrome extensions like that. So I thought this was actually a perfect topic for us to talk about because I just looked at that for my other podcast the other day. But before we dive into that, Joe, let's talk a little bit about Spring Q that's coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so Spring Q is going to be a big virtual event, and it starts March 18th, and it goes all the way through March 27th, and there's something to do every single day. Now, it's going to be phenomenal because there's over 400 presentations presented by educators for educators for the moment that we are in. Whether you are distance learning, transitioning into hybrid learning, or transitioning into face-to-face, Spring Q is going to have sessions that is relevant to you. And we're super excited about that. And another thing that I'm really excited about is the teacher wellness sections that we're going to be having. Now, every day at 4 o'clock, there's going to be a brand new video released that showcases what teachers do, their time off away from the screen, away from the Zoom, to bring back the joy, to bring back the mindfulness, to really get this calmness through them. And so, you know, Kyle, last year you did a beer tasting session for that. And you're going to be doing another one for this section as well. And I made some cooking videos. So I made some cooking videos, how to use the Instant Pot for some really good comfort food. And so I'm really excited about that. And then finally, I'm excited about the Q After Hours sessions. So the Q After Hours sessions are fun ways to connect with one another and to be with one another in a fun and exciting way. So we have like Stump the Rockstar by Ryan and Brian. And we have Q Karaoke hosted by Coach Q. We have Silent Disco hosted by Midnight Pedagogy. We have Q Trivia Night. We have the Among Us Night. We have so many different things to connect after hours from the conference that I'm super excited about those things. And Kyle, you're going to be participating in many, many events during Spring Q. Can you tell me a little bit about what you are excited about?
Yeah, you mentioned that I'll be doing another round of a video on beer tasting, kind of similar to the one I did for Fall Q. But this time around, I'm actually going to bring my Beer to You podcasting partner Ben Dixon in on it, and we're going to do a video of the two of us basically sharing a beer together as a live stream that we'll then share with the Q audience a little bit. Instead of just the four tastings by me, it'll probably be just like one by Ben and I, and just seeing what it's like having a beer with others, not just by yourself with it. So, and that'll actually be very similar to a new segment that Ben and I are going to be doing for YouTube and Facebook, that's essentially going to be called like What's in Your Fridge, where if you've ever listened to that show, we always at the beginning of our show do a little bit of riffing together, catching up, and then we have a beer, we talk about it a little bit, and it's basically going to be that part of our episodes as a Facebook and YouTube only thing. We're not going to be releasing those as episodes. So, and then I'm also going to be doing another Google Bootcamp with Corey Coble during Spring Q, where we're going to basically do crash courses on various Google tools like Docs, Sheets, Slides, Drawings, Forms, so on and so forth. So be on the lookout for that. We will be doing Meet the Podcasters again with this show, also with the Beer EDU podcast. That'll be there. There's the Meet the Authors. That'll be there. Plugging my book, To the Edge, Success is a Failure Through Risk-Taking, once again. So, and the book is actually coming up on its first birthday here very, very soon. When this episode drops, it's about a week away. It was March 7th of 2020 when the book was released. So that birthday is coming up pretty soon. So if you don't have a copy of it, go ahead and grab one on Amazon, please. Thank you. But I also may have a few that I can maybe sign and get to you. So if you're interested in a signed copy of it, just reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram or something. I might be able to get that to you. So yeah, so a lot of different things going on with Spring Q coming up. I've got my hands full with a lot of different stuff, but looking forward to it once again. I know I would much rather be in Palm Springs for it, having breakfast at Pinocchio's, or going on a hike up the mountain while we're down there with a group of people, and then all the after hours activities live and in person. But virtual is going to be a good time again, and then maybe in a year from now we'll be able to do the live and in person event once again.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the big thing is, you know, the big deal is trying to recreate a face-to-face environment in a distance learning environment. That's what we try to do in our classrooms, and that's what we're trying to do here for Spring Q. And while nothing, I'll repeat, nothing is better than face-to-face being with your friends and your family in the Q-universe. We know that still connecting and collaborating and being with one another, even virtually, is really going to fill that bucket. Now, also another thing that I'm going to be hosting during Spring Q, it'll be on March 21st at 2:00, which is a Sunday. I'm hosting a roundtable discussion on teacher self-care. On teachers who have lost weight, on teachers who have bettered themselves during this pandemic, tips and tricks on how they did that and the reason behind it. And I'm saying this right now because, Kyle, you are coming up on a big milestone as well. You're coming up on day 100 of constant working out. That day 100 means not you worked out for 100 days. It means you've worked out for 100 consecutive days. Right. So I believe by the time people are listening to this podcast, you will have hit your milestone of 100. Is that correct?
That is correct. We drop these episodes on Saturdays, and Saturday, February 27th, that's coming up, the day that this releases, will actually be day 100. So when this episode is out and is in your ears, maybe you're out on your own walk or run that day, I'm going to be getting in my 100th day in a row of walking. And then I've been on the Peloton for almost 40 days in a row now on top of that. So I'm actually double dipping each day now. So getting a walk in the morning and then getting in a bike at some point during the day, and then really started incorporating a lot of stretching in that as well, because I'm starting to find out that not as flexible as I once was back in the day. So the stretching actually is really nice after a long walk or a bike ride or something like that as well. So yes, but that day 100, I'm really looking forward to that.
You know, I'm excited about that. That's a celebration to be had. Now it's not my, I have a celebration to happen that week as well. It's not going to happen the day this drops, but during that week, during next week, probably, I think actually a week from today, I'm going to hit day 350 of constantly working out, and the day of Spring Q, the start of Spring Q, March 18th. That is my 1 year anniversary. My 1 year anniversary of working out and running and walking and getting over at least 5 miles a day out, which I'm excited. I'm excited. I may celebrate by taking a day off the next day. We will see. It's a truly transformative vindication of what hard work can do. And I want teachers to understand that it's not easy, and that I understand what's happening right now, because a lot of teachers have dropped about 60 to 70% of their daily steps by working remotely. And I want to put that into perspective a little bit. So Kyle, today, by the time I sat down at my workstation at 9 o'clock this morning, I had 18,900 steps. And when I stood up right before this podcast, I had 19,300 steps. That is only 400 steps between 9 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. That is ridiculous, right? That is ridiculous. So I can only imagine educators who haven't gotten up that early, who don't go out there and do it that early, that they are constantly just really devoting themselves to their students, but not devoting themselves to themselves. So I really encourage educators to find that way to get up in the morning. We talk about addition by subtraction. So if you're finding yourself restless and staying up late at night, watching TV, playing video games, find a way to get yourself to bed earlier, get yourself up a little bit earlier so that you can be mindful about your steps during the course of that day. And I know, Kyle, you have been doing it for nearly 100 days now, and I know that you're feeling much better. I can see it in your face. Your face is slimming down. And it's just a testament to iron will, getting out there and doing it, because we all know it is not easy to start, and it is not easy to constantly continue day in and day out.
Oh, for sure. So, and I can tell you that before I started the walking every day, that I would have days where I had less than 3,000 steps for the entire day. And of those 3,000 steps, 2,500 of them were probably either in the before or the after, when, yeah, you're just not getting up and moving around. So I make a conscious effort to try to get up and move around even during the day. So in those short breaks between classes, getting up and just walking around doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to do something. I might just be pacing back and forth just to get some blood flow back into my legs or something like that. But just getting up to do that is definitely key. But yeah, on a typical day now, I'm not usually less than 15,000 steps, and about, I would say, 7,500 to 9,000 of those steps are on my morning walk prior to school starting in the morning. So, I mean, the majority of those are still coming from the walk, but I mean, you're still talking about 7,500 to 9,000 steps that I wouldn't be getting if I wasn't getting up to do that. And then I squeeze in that Peloton ride sometime before school. So I've already gotten in about 2 hours of working out prior to school even starting some days. Sometimes I save that ride for later on. And then I have been, again, incorporating that stretching after the walks and rides. And then I even do an extra stretch at night sometimes. So like if I'm watching a hockey game and you got that 20-minute intermission, sometimes I'll fire up that Peloton app on the TV and do a 15-minute stretch session, you know, really limber up that the lower body, especially because I'm using so much of that from the walks and the rides and getting the hip stretched out, the leg stretched out real nice. And it's really starting to make a difference with how I feel and my ability on the bike. And then I've done a couple fitness tests on the bike where I can't believe I'm already in that good of shape from it. I don't necessarily look it because I'm still carrying a lot of extra weight, but even then I'm still down about 20 pounds since the first of the year. The weight loss has slowed down a little bit because I am working out so much. The body is basically screaming, "Hey, knock it off," a little bit, but now the weight's going to come off eventually, and I'm not too worried about it because I feel better and I'm doing stuff now that I wasn't doing 4 or 5 months ago. And just, I'm looking forward to continuing this every day as long as I'm physically able to do.
You know, I love what you said there, Kyle, because I'm not going to say reading a book. So I'm listening to a book on my morning walk called Exercised. And the whole title is Exercised, The Reason We Never Evolved to Workout, but Why We Should. And they talk about how when your body overexerts itself, your body internally tries to hold back calories. It tries to not burn as many so that you don't go into this feast or famine kind of mode. And so you really have to find that sweet spot where you're working out enough, but eating enough so your body doesn't trigger the saving of calories. You want to make sure that calorie flow is working and not being held back. And so I try to be very mindful of after I run or work out or this or that, that I eat every like 2 or 3 hours, something small, something healthy. But so my body knows, hey, you're getting food. There's no need to hold back on that calorie burn. Keep that metabolism up the way it should be, because the body is very good at saving you from feast or famine. And so it's a very eye-opening book. It's very textbook written. So it may not be like a read that you want to listen to stay awake, but it's very informative. And I've gotten a lot of great ideas on how to keep the metabolism up while burning over 2,500 calories in a day.
Yeah. And while we could sit here and talk about this for an entire episode, we have promised the people other things to chat about. So why don't we transition a little bit into some of the accessibility tools and features that we promised listeners 15 minutes ago at the beginning of this.
Yeah. So, you know, thank you for sticking with us. You know, when we start talking about this, we get so just excited and proud of accomplishments of each other and the Fit EDU community. So thank you for listening all the way through. But yes, you know, Kyle, accessibility features are very important when utilizing technology, and they become even more evident and more important when students are working from home. Right, where a teacher can't look over the shoulder and read something to a student or point something to a student. So it's very important that we're looking at, you know, this universal design for learning, this universal design for lesson planning, that ensures there's no roadblock in the path towards learning. And so finding ways to remove barriers is incredibly important. So we're going to start listing some of the tools that we find very, very important during this time. And I'll tell you right now, one of my favorite accessibility tools for teachers and students is Mote. That is M-O-T-E, Mote. And what Mote does, it's a Chrome extension that when you install it on to your Chrome browser, it adds a brand new button into all of your Google tools. And whenever you go to leave a comment, there's a Mote button and you can click on it and you can leave a voice comment for your students at any time. And it will not only leave the voice comment, but will also transcribe it into whatever language that you want. So I've used Mote to leave voice comments and voice instructions in Google Classroom. I've done it to leave voice comments in Google Slides and Google Docs, in Google Form, all the different Google products where there is a comment feature. You can leave voice comments using Mote. So I love Mote. It's doing a fantastic job. And Mote is one of the tools that I utilized in my Paul Bunyan competition with another educator. And what I mean by that is this. I had an educator who told me once, I let my students write everything in Google Docs, but I make them print it out and hand it in to me because I'm better at leaving comments with a red pen than I can online. And I said, I promise you, I will find a way to add comments faster than your red pen using Mote. And I did it. And I was able to leave all the comments I wanted, all the highlights I wanted, everything I wanted using Mote faster than that teacher did with a red pen. And the kids didn't have to print anything out. And the kids didn't have to turn anything in because everything was done through Google Docs. So Mote gets my seal of approval for not only accessibility, but also for online distance learning, hybrid or face-to-face grading of digital work.
Yeah, great tool for students that may not be able to read comments very well, especially for younger learners or those that struggle with reading. So definitely check that one out. So now, speaking of Chrome extensions that assist struggling readers, I should say, is I stumbled across this one through an infographic created by the Nevada Digital Learning Collaborative. So I would love to give credit for who created this, but it's actually not listed on the website. So, but again, on nvdigitallearning.org, I found this resource. It's got a whole series of Chrome extensions that are designed for diverse learners. And one of those is called Open Dyslexic. So a person with dyslexia, they struggle with reading. So I'm not an expert on it by any means. I don't 100% understand exactly what dyslexia is. But from my basic understanding is that dyslexia makes letters appear to be flipped around, and it makes reading a lot harder for somebody with dyslexia. So if you are somebody who knows a little bit more about it, I would love to know a little bit more about it. So please feel free to slide in my DMs and correct me on anything I may be saying that is incorrect or misleading here. But with Open Dyslexic, this Chrome extension here, what this does is that it replaces the font on the screen with a font that helps to aid in reading. So because part of dyslexia as well is that certain fonts are harder to read than others. And if you have a website that has a font that is very hard for somebody with dyslexia to read, it actually, by clicking on the extension, changes that font into something that makes it a little bit easier to read for that person. And you can actually pair that with another extension called Read Aloud. And what this one does, this allows for a person to listen as the AI, the computer, whatever you want to refer to it as, read the web page that you're on. So you can listen to the page being read and at the same time read along with it using the Open Dyslexic font in a font that's much easier for somebody with dyslexia to read.
No, and that's great. We have to make sure that we're utilizing tools that meets the needs of all of our learners. And those are two important aspects that really need to be met. And so knowing that, I'm going to tell you of this next tool, which is embedded in many other tools. It's made by Microsoft. It's called Immersive Reader. Now, Immersive Reader is built in to a lot of your favorite tools like Flipgrid and Edgy and Nearpod, all these different tools that you're using. This is built into it. But there is also an unofficial Chrome extension called the Immersive Reader, which does the exact same thing and uses the same Microsoft API for Immersive Reader. And what it allows you to do is highlight any text. It will translate that text into any language that you choose. And many of those languages, it'll not only translate the text, but it'll read it to you in that new language. You can change the color of the background and color of the font to make it easier to read based upon color blindness or dyslexia. And it will also translate the text into three fonts that are easier to read for dyslexic students. And one of my favorite features of the Immersive Reader is there is a Pictionary. So there's a picture dictionary. So you can click on any or hover over any word, and it'll bring up an image of what that word looks like in picture form, right? And so it's using the idea of iconography to showcase for you what that word means. And so it's just a phenomenal tool. And again, it's built into a lot of your favorite tools already. But if you are a Chrome user, definitely go look for the Immersive Reader, unofficial Immersive Reader Chrome extension, because it is a phenomenal tool for all websites that you visit. It's just a great tool. So when Kyle brought up his two tools, I'm like, the Immersive Reader must be brought up.
And that's what I like about when we do these is that we have an idea for a conversation and then it can go totally sideways just by something somebody else says in the conversation there. So we don't necessarily always plan these out to the T or anything. So because we'd like to have a little bit of fun with it and go a different direction sometimes. So now, speaking of Immersive Reader, another one that is designed for reading text, a text-to-speech type tool, but also has a lot of other features in it, is Text Helps Read Write Extensions. Mm. So this one includes a word in a picture dictionary, much like you mentioned with Immersive Reader. Word prediction and text-to-speech is part of that. There's a screenshot reader as part of that. You can use an annotation tool to highlight text in there and then right-click in order to have it read. The picture dictionary, word dictionary, whatever it may be. So a really great tool that I have used in place of a human reader for students on assessments and whatnot. So if you're not reading the same assessment to a group of students, that one student that is working on something else, they have that and it works very, very well in place of a human reader for something like that. So, and because it's text help, it's very, very robust. So I do believe that it's a freemium kind of feature where teachers can get those, but then it does cost money for students to have it. But the read write extension is another really good one.
Yes. Oh, I can't say enough good things about the Text Help team. They are phenomenal with their resources. They even have a math resource called Equatio, which helps teachers and students be able to hand write out formulas, and it turns it into text for them, so they don't have to be looking for those, you know, those different symbols and stuff to write out math. So yeah, I love Text Help. They are a phenomenal company. So I'm super happy that you brought that up. Now, we've been talking a lot about Chrome extensions, but I want to mention an extension in Google Slides. Well, it's not an extension, it's an add-on. And this one is called Grackle Slides, like Crackle, but with a G. And what Grackle Slides does is, after you've created a slide deck, it'll actually go, once you launch it, it'll go through the entire slide deck to tell you how accessible it is to your readers. So it'll say, hey, you added a picture, but you didn't add an alt text. Hey, you're using a font that is not easily read by these subset of students. Hey, you're doing this. You're using a color that's not, it does a really good job. It just goes through the entire thing and it gives you a list of things to fix to meet the needs of all students. And I think it's just a phenomenal tool. And it opens up the idea of, wait a minute, we thought we were making something great for all students, and we realize we're not. We're not meeting the needs of all students. So it actually reminds me, after every time that I create a slide deck, I run that Grackle Slides kind of filter, so I can remind myself of what I am not doing, not only for my youngest learners, but also for a lot of educators, right? There's a lot of educators out there who are colorblind. There's a lot of educators out there that do have dyslexia. So when I'm presenting to them at a distance, I want to make sure I'm meeting the needs of all of the educators I'm presenting to. So I always run my Grackle Slides filter to see what I'm doing, I'm not meeting the needs of, and I make those changes before I present. So Grackle Slides, again, that's like Crackle with a G, that goes through and assesses how accessible is your slide deck. So I love it.
I'm going to have to check that one out. I've never heard of that one. So there's a lot of different ways where you can check accessibility, but that sounds way easier than a lot of the other ways that are out there. So definitely need to check that one out. So I'm sticking with the Chrome extension theme here just because there's so many great ones that are out there. So, but another good one is one called Color Enhancer. And what this does is that if somebody is colorblind, they may not be able to see certain things on a website as a result of that. So Color Enhancer adjusts the colors on a website that allows those details to become visible then to somebody that is colorblind. So now I'm not colorblind, so I don't know what that experience is like at all. And from what I understand, it's mostly like reds, greens, and blues that tend to be affected by colorblindness. So this Color Enhancer extension, click on that, and anytime that there's colors that could be hard to see for somebody with color blindness, it actually contrasts them so those things can become visible again.
No, I love that. And Kyle, keep bringing the Chrome extensions. You know I love me some Chrome extensions, right? I mean, I am a Chrome extension hoarder, and I love them. And so the more, the merrier in my book. I'm going to bring up some things that I think a lot of educators are already doing or are already using, but using them in a different way. So screencasting or videos, online video creating is becoming more and more important to me. So, you know, companies like Screencastify and Loom, if you are just writing written directions and you're not including a quick video description using Screencastify or Loom, you are really, really missing out. And let me tell you what I'm talking about. So like in Google Classroom or Microsoft Teams, you may put down a comment or a description that you want your students to do, but just because you write it doesn't mean students understand it. Sometimes students need to see you. Sometimes they need to hear your voice for them to completely grasp what you're asking. And so like in Google Classroom, I will still write out the description of what I want my students to do, but then I'll jump into Screencastify and do a quick 1-minute rundown of what I want them to do. And I just paste that link or I embed it into my Google Classroom description. That's number one. But also I've been doing this in my professional life as well. I just found out about 3 weeks ago that when you install the Loom Chrome extension, it automatically embeds a Loom button in your email. And I am always worried that what I write in an email is not coming across in the way that I want it to. So what I've been doing for very important emails is not only will I write the email out, but I'll click that Loom button and I will explain, hey, look, this is what I wanted. This is why I'm writing you the email. And this is why I'm so excited to be talking to you. I add that in and all you do is click record, done. And it embeds it right into the email with the ease of your mouse. And I think that makes it the message more accessible to the reader because they hear the excitement in your voice. They see you. You're not just another email. You are there. And so I have been doing that in my professional life, in my professional mode. And I think we need to do that a lot more in our educational life. And so a lot more video, a lot more explanations on video instead of just text. So I think Screencastify or Loom, two great ways to be able to really amplify your message to your students in more than just text-based.
And another one that you can add to that too is Flipgrid Shorts. That's another one. I was using that a lot when schools first shut down almost a year ago. So, but all three of those are great tools to do that. So, and I agree with you on, instead of just that text that you're getting as a message, having a short video makes all the difference. So on Twitter, I usually get irritated when somebody has the auto message that DMs you when you follow them or something like that. You get that, hey, thanks for the follow message or something like that. I usually get irritated by that. It's like, that's so impersonal. But I actually got one the other day. I followed somebody and I got a DM and I'm thinking, oh, this is what it is. Once again, it's just another one of those. But it was actually a DM of a short video introducing themselves and cool. saying thank you for following and whatnot. And I thought, wait a minute, that's actually pretty cool. So, having more video out there is definitely something that is needed across the board, whether it's professionally or with students, so on and so forth. So now shifting gears a little bit, a lot of schools are using Chromebooks. We're at one-to-one Chromebooks because they're inexpensive. They're efficient. They get the job done. They're good machines. So no matter how much the machine costs. So built into Chromebooks are a variety of accessibility features. One's for audio, one's for visual, so on and so forth. So just by doing a quick Google search on Chromebook accessibility features, you can actually go to the Google for EDU website where it talks about each of the different accessibility features that are in a Chromebook if you're looking to turn those things on. Things like screen magnifiers, where you can enlarge on-screen content every time you log in. It's already done. You don't have to go and magnify the browser window. A lot of my kids love the mouse cursor size to be increased. So you get the ones, I mean, and some of them, they're just massive. I actually asked the kids, well, how are you even using that? Because it's so big and you can't just pinpoint a small area on the screen as a result of that. So if you have students that are blind, there's Braille support within a Chromebook that is compatible with the Braille display that you can use with a Chromebook. So Select to Speak is available within it. Closed captioning is available within a Chromebook. So, and then another good one is sticky keys. If you have, especially younger students that don't have big enough fingers to really reach across and hold down two keys at once, where sticky keys, where if you're trying to teach kids how to capitalize, they can't necessarily hold down shift and the letter at the same time. You press shift and it holds it on and then they can go and press the letter. So that's what sticky keys does. So again, if you just doing a quick Google search of accessibility features for Chromebooks, you'll find all sorts of different things that Chromebooks can do along with tutorials and videos on how to set those things up as well.
No, those are great because they're built in. They're there, but I mean, how many times do we give a student a Chromebook and walk them through accessibility features? We don't. And then how many times are teachers, you know, shown the Chromebook their students are using and then walk through the accessibility features? They don't, right? And so a lot of these features are held dormant just because they're not known that they're there. So it's really, really important as an educator to identify, hey, what devices is my district purchasing and what accessibility features are built in to the tools of that device. And you know, we just have to just do a deep dive to figure that out. Now, I'm going to stick with my Google Slides theme. And I just love the idea of closed captioning built right in to the slides. Now, you may be saying, well, right now, that's not really, you know, a big deal because, we use Google Meet and it auto captions, and or we use Microsoft Teams and it auto captions. But guess what? Over 60% of educators right now are using Zoom, and Zoom does not have auto caption. It does not have auto caption unless you purchase a third party. You don't have auto captioning. So I've been showing educators, hey, look, you still need to have some kind of closed captioning. So why not share your screen when you're just chatting and then have the topic of what you're talking about and then turn on the closed captioning right there in your Google Slides. And you're being closed captioned the entire time. Your students know what the topic is and you get that accessibility feature built in. Now, I also want to mention that Kyle, I think it was like a year and a half ago, we were talking about Pear Deck. And I was like, hey, Pear Deck is built in Google Slides. Do they have closed captioning? And you're like, well, I don't think they do. I go, I'm going to figure it out. And so I put my head down for like an hour and a half and I figured, hey, right before that Pear Deck starts, if you hit the closed captioning button, you'll have closed captions for the entirety of your Pear Deck. And that still works. One caveat. You have to have the Pear Deck PowerUp Chrome extension installed for that little hack to work. But when it does work, it's a beautiful thing. And if you go to the Sons of Technology YouTube channel, which is at youtube.com/sonsoftechnology, we show you exactly how to set that up and when to press the button and all those cool things to do. So definitely check out the Sons of Technology YouTube channel, because everything that we talk about here, there's a video for it on how to use it, where to find it, and what to do with it. So definitely go check that out.
Yeah, we've mentioned this on the show before. I remember that day very vividly, you asking me that, and then about 2 hours later, I figured it out. So, that's one going to stick with me for quite a while. So now, Joe, this next extension I'm going to talk about, something that I use on a daily basis, something that saves me when it comes to writing emails, putting together presentations. I use this one writing my book, and it saved me gobs of time writing my book. And I'm pretty sure you use this one too, and that's the Grammarly extension. So I don't necessarily use the Grammarly extension because I'm a terrible speller or I'm terrible at grammar. I use it more because I type fast and you make mistakes when you type fast. So it picks those things up and helps me in the proofreading process before sending an email, or in the case of when I wrote my book, it really helped me basically proofread as I went versus having to go back and spend a bunch of time with it later on. So, but why do I have to be the only one using Grammarly? Why do you or teachers need to be the only ones using Grammarly? Why can't our kids use it too? So kids need to install this Chrome extension as well, because not only does it work on websites, not only does it work on things like Google Docs, I mean, it works pretty much anywhere. And then you can actually install it to use on the desktop version of things like Microsoft Word and PowerPoint as well, to where you have a very nice, very robust grammar and spell check that are built into that. But I mean, you might be arguing, well, I already have those things in Word and Docs and whatnot. Why would I need this one too? Once again, these ones come up automatically. You're not necessarily having to click to do the spell check or anything like that. And then when you hover over them, it gives you the suggestions to fix the mistake right then and there. Don't buy into the go premium. There's always a message that's going to come up. You might even get an email about going premium with it. Everything you need is perfectly fine in the free version of it. So, but I don't know where I'd be without that Grammarly extension. That one is always turned on. And again, it saved me all sorts of times as a result of having that one installed.
Well, I don't know. They have that little thing at the bottom that says there's six other things. If you have premium, we'll show you what they are. And I'm like, what is it? What am I doing wrong? Show me. But this brings up a really good point, Kyle, where you have teachers that would say, you have two teachers in two different camps. One, I'm teaching them grammar. Using that is cheating. And then the other teacher camp is, if it's a useful tool that everybody has access to, it's not cheating. It's utilizing the tools that surround us. So what would you say to that, Kyle? If you're an English class writing an English paper, getting help from Grammarly, cheating or resourceful?
I would say the same thing I would say to those that allow kids to use text-to-speech for everything, where one camp will say they're not going to get any better at reading by just doing that because they're just going to be listening to it. Okay. And I don't believe that's the case. I feel that if you have a struggling reader or somebody that's learning how to read, by having them read along with it being read to them, it's going to improve skills over time. You're going to start to recognize those things as they're coming up and not needing to necessarily listen to it down the road. Same thing with the spelling and the grammar check. If you start seeing that you're misspelling a certain word over and over, eventually you're going to learn to spell that word correctly. Okay. Or if you're seeing that you're not including a comma in a place where you should be, you're going to start to recognize where that needs to go. Now, it could go the other way where all of a sudden now you're sticking in commas, just thinking like, oh, it needs a comma here now. And then you'll get the thing that comes up and says you don't need a comma here. But over time, using tools like that, you're going to start to learn those things and you're going to start seeing fewer mistakes. If a person is seeing the same number of mistakes after using Grammarly for a few weeks, they're not necessarily trying to improve at that point, which I don't think is with the case with 99.9% of learners. You're going to see that improvement and not just be that person that just lets that continue to be a mistake over and over and over again.
Yeah, you know, and that's passive conditioning, right? That allows you to see what you're most commonly like. What the words that I misspell the most is when there has to be two M's, right? When there's two M's in something, I always forget to add an M, and I'm like, what am I missing?
So you struggle with the word committee.
Yeah, always.
That's two M's, two T's, two E's. So there's all sorts of doubles.
It's just too much doubling down, right? And there's one, you know, there's one word, and I'll admit it, I always misspell, and I know I misspell it, but that's just the way my fingers work on the keyboard, and it's there. I always spell it T-H-I-E-R. I know it's not spelled that way, but I always type it that way. So it always comes up, and I'm like, I know Grammarly. I know I'm spelling it wrong, right? But it's just a good mindful tool. And I had a really great discussion with Jennifer Gonzalez from Cult of Pedagogy this week, where we were talking about, you know, if you have a question on a test or an exam or in your class that a Google assistant or an Alexa can answer, it's not the fault of the student that can answer that question just by asking this assistant. It's the fault of us, the educator, not asking the right kind of question. Right. And so if you have this Grammarly available to you, it's not that, you know, are we the teachers no longer needed for grammar and spelling? It's what can this do to enhance what my students do in my classroom and really focus on creative storytelling or creative writing or knowing how to write a research paper. That's what needs to be focused on, not the little nitty gritties, right? That a computer program could help us become better at over time.
Yeah, absolutely. So now I got some other tools here still, but I believe it's your turn for the next tool.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that is becoming more and more relevant to me is that there's so much online that is flashy and it tries to get your attention away from what you need to be doing. Like if you send students to a current event article on a website, there's going to be all these different ads that pop up and all these different flashy GIF ads. It gets kind of annoying. And sometimes it can drive the attention away from the student reading what you want them to read and more towards, oh, I wonder what happens when I click this. So I love the Mercury Reader extension for this purpose because it takes away all the fluff, right? I always say Mercury Readerize it. And it will take away all the fluff from the web page and only leave the text that is related to that specific article. Now, this is for all students because I get distracted very easily. And I think of that movie Up from Disney, right? Where that dog Doug sees a squirrel and goes, squirrel. And all the attention goes away from what he should be doing to this random thing off to the side. I don't want any educational squirrels to be popping up while my students are doing current event readings. So that Mercury Reader is a great tool to take away all of those things that can draw attention away from the article and bring it back to the article. So I love that for that simple fact.
You and I think way too much alike, because as you were starting to talk about Mercury Reader, I actually had that pulled up to talk about next. So now I don't have to talk about that one. So it's a great tool. And then it actually allows you to print that out. So if you need to print out that article, and it has all of the stuff taken away from it. And so a similar extension to that is another one called Print Friendly PDF, where you can actually eliminate a lot of the stuff on a page. So you can download it as a PDF that has a lot less stuff on it. So that one was more designed for people that are trying to save money on ink, I think, not necessarily removing distractions or whatever, but that's another similar one, the Print Friendly PDF one. So as we're starting to kind of wrap things up, I've got one more that I'd like to talk about a little bit here. And this is one called the Stay Focused extension. And what this one is, it's almost like you can go into the settings of your phone and set timers on apps that you know you're going to spend a lot of time on, and that after a certain amount of time, it'll shut that app down on your phone for you. So this one allows you for you to do it in your Chrome browser. So when you install this extension, what it's going to allow you to do is block sites that you know you're going to start going to if you're trying to get some work done. So you can set up the amount of time on that site to keep you away from it. You can block it completely. So if you know that you're going to spend a boatload of time on Twitter while you should be getting work done, you can go on there and just block it altogether, or set like a 10-minute timer for it. So you get 10 minutes just scrolling through Twitter, and then after that, boom, time to get back to work. So the Stay Focused extension is another really good one.
I love it. I love it because we all know we get a little bit sidetracked, even as teachers, get a little bit sidetracked while we're working, and maybe go on YouTube a little bit and look up some office clips, or, you know, we're going here or there, and, you know, we need to be reminded, hey, you need to get to work. So those little nudges are really important. The last one that I want to bring up is a celebration extension. Right. We want to make sure that all students can understand that there's a celebration going on. And so there is an extension called the Confetti Cannon. So after a student has done a good job, after a student has done something amazing, answered a question correctly, answered a problem correctly, there's a confetti cannon. So it makes a noise, like it pops, and it gives little confetti falling down the entirety of the screen. And so it reminds me of like when you do the silent clapping or the silent celebrations when somebody does something good, the confetti cannon is like the digital version of that. So the students recognize they did a good job and we're celebrating together. So that would be my last extension. I know it's not really an accessibility tool, but it's one that showcases celebration for a lot of different students.
Awesome. So we have so many different great tools that we're able to present here today. So, and I feel like we've gone over some of them before on the show, but it's always nice to kind of get back and look at these ones again, because so many of these tools that even the ones that we talked about today, I have them installed and then I just kind of forgot about them. So it's nice to kind of be reminded of those once again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've had, you know, 56, 57 episodes up to this point, and you know, it's hard to pinpoint when we recorded those. And so always bringing them back kind of to the mindful top of our minds is always important, especially if you had been using like the Mercury Reader extension and then stopped for a while, or you had been using the text help tools and then stopped for a while. It's a good reminder that there are tools that help students understand and complete work in a better way. And so it's always good to be reminded. Now, Kyle, I want to end our podcast with a little bit of celebration that I found out this week. And so it's very interesting. Back in November, EdTech Magazine released the top 30 EdTech influencers for higher ed. And I didn't even know about it until the other day. somebody on our Sons of Technology Twitter, at Sons of Tech EDU, sent a compliment saying, hey, congratulations on being selected as one of the top 30 influencers in higher ed. And I was like, what is this about? And so I click on the link, and lo and behold, Sons of Technology podcast was listed as one of the top influencers of higher ed education. And they listed my name on there, but I cannot accept that designation without saying that that would not have happened without Kyle Anderson. That would not have happened without my partner in innovation, my partner in being able to put this podcast out. Now, I know a lot of the tools that we give out are for K-12, but they are absolutely just as important for higher ed. And so I am honored to have been listed with that amazing group of Dean's List recipients. And so I just wanted to say, those of you who are listening, thank you so much for bringing that to the attention of EdTech Magazine and putting us out there as an influencer and as influencers, not only in our profession, but through our podcast. So I just want to say thank you so much. And you know, it's just I'm not very boastful at all, but when I saw that this week, I was like, what? Back in November? Amazing. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much to our listeners. And as always, thank you to Kyle for being there every single step of the way and the entire EdTech Army. That both participate in our podcast, participate in our Twitter group, and participate in the audience while we are streaming live. So just thank you so much. And then lastly, I want to give a shout out to the Fit EDU group on Twitter. Fit EDU is a group of educators that give inspirational daily posts to get teachers up and outside and to better themselves through fitness and tips and tricks on how to do that. And so we want to invite you, if you are looking at starting a journey, you're in the middle of a journey, or you're at the top of your journey that you can help out, please go onto Twitter and onto Facebook and look up Fit EDU and join our community. We have over 100 educators that are a part of it. And I enjoy it each and every day, seeing the growth and passion that educators have about education, but also the passion about bettering themselves during this time of distance learning, hybrid learning, or face-to-face learning.
Yeah, thank you to everybody that has stuck with us for all these episodes. And thank you, Joe, for including me as part of that that awesome honor that you just learned about. So I can't believe we missed that from several months ago. So I thought that was pretty funny when that started popping up the other day. So, but yeah, so thank you for that. And like I said, thank you to everybody else that listens and contributes and gets something out of what we do here on a biweekly basis. So we wouldn't do it without you. You know what? I think we probably would do it without the listeners, because it gives you and I an opportunity to talk. But no, we definitely do it for the listeners.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And listeners, we know what you're going through. We know that every state is different, and every district is different, and every teacher's circumstance is different. We do want to say that we support educators in their journey towards promoting safe return to schools. We do support educators in getting the COVID vaccine so that they feel safe in returning to schools. And we're with you 100% on doing not only what's best for students, but doing what's best for you and your health. So we are there with you along the way. And, you know, we are almost one complete year into this distance learning experiment, this unplanned detour into a new type of modality in teaching our young students. And many of us have said, how many days are going to be left of this? How many days are we going to continue to do this? And I want to leave you with this. Let us not count the days. Let us make the days count for us. Let us make the days count for our students. And let us make the days count for how we can make a difference in education, in believing in ourselves, in believing in our staff, and promoting a great way to increase the experience and enhancement and engagement of utilizing technology in the classroom for the betterment of our students. And that's what Sons of Technology are here for. That's what Sons of Technology will do every single day, as being a collaborator and a communicator and a very good community member in your journey. So thank you again for listening. Thank you again for watching. And thank you so much for being a member of the EdTech Army. And as always, keep on innovating, keep on moving, and always ditch that fear. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day.